for this morning will be taken from the book of 1 Samuel chapter 7. Beginning with verse 3, I'll be reading from the Revised Standard Version. Then Samuel said to all the house of Israel, "If you are returning to the Lord with all your heart, then put away the foreign gods and the Ashtaroth from among you, and direct your heart to the Lord and serve Him only, and He will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. So Israel put away the Baals and the Ashtaroth, and they served the Lord only." Then Samuel said, "Gather all Israel at Mizpah, and I will pray to the Lord for you." So they gathered at Mizpah and drew water and poured it out before the Lord and fasted on that day and said there, "We have sinned against the Lord." And Samuel judged the people of Israel at Mizpah. Now when the Philistines heard that the people of Israel had gathered at Mizpah, the lords of the Philistines went up against Israel. And when the people of Israel heard of it, they were afraid of the Philistines. And the people of Israel said to Samuel, "Do not cease to cry to the Lord our God for us, that He may save us from the hand of the Philistines." So Samuel took a suckling lamb and offered it as a whole burnt offering to the Lord. And Samuel cried to the Lord for Israel. And the Lord answered him. As Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to attack Israel. But the Lord thundered with a mighty voice that day against the Philistines and threw them into confusion, and they were routed before Israel. And the men of Israel went out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines and smote them as far as below Bethkar. Then Samuel took a stone and set it up between Mizpah and Jeshanah, and called its name Ebenezer. For he said, "Hitherto the Lord has helped us." So the Philistines were subdued and did not again enter the territory of Israel. And the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. The cities which the Philistines had taken from Israel were restored to Israel from Ekron to Gath. And Israel rescued their territory from the hand of the Philistines. There was peace also between Israel and the Amorites. We sing about it. "Here I raise my Ebenezer, hither by thy help I've come." Monuments. That stone, resurrected by Samuel, erected there on the plains of Mizpah, was for the very sole purpose of reminding Israel in days to come what God had done on their behalf. We celebrate, we remember. This day, this weekend, is a special weekend of remembrance of loved ones, of ones who have given their lives for our country, of military victories, as well as somber times. I don't know if you've been able to read some of the, I guess you would call them eulogies, in the Denver Post about various ones who've given their lives in Iraq or Afghanistan for our sake. One that impressed me that I read this week was about a young man who was always helpful. His mother and his father said that any time, even as a teenager, that there was someone in need of help in the neighborhood, he would help. Whether it was pulling weeds or stopping with a car that had broken down or helping to put out a fire, he just always seemed to have other people's interests at heart. They were on patrol and they had stopped a car. And as they were going back to that car, he realized that the fella had a set of explosives within his vehicle. And he pulled him out of the car and began to wrestle with him. And as he wrestled with him, a couple of the other soldiers were coming to help. A grenade dislodged from within this man's clothing, its pin pulled. There he was. He had a terrorist at hand and two of his buddies coming to help. He said he acted spontaneously. He took his helmet off He covered the grenade with his helmet, and then he covered his helmet with his body. He gave his life. Such compassion. It's worthy of us as a country and as a people to remember such sacrifice for our behalf, for the sake of liberty and freedom. Can you imagine, though, as the people pass by this rock at Mizpah, what their fathers have to tell them? Little one might say, "Dad, so how many did you kill with a sword?" And the father would have to say, "Well, son, that rock was raised to the Lord. Because before the battle was ever fought by me, before I ever pursued the enemy, the Lord had already given us the victory. He thundered from heaven while Samuel, our prophet, was offering a sacrifice to God." When the children of Israel went through the Jordan River, do you remember they didn't have to swim, they didn't have to build rafts, they didn't have to build a bridge, they didn't go over on pontoons. How did they cross the Jordan as they began their battle into the land of Canaan? It was on dry ground. 40 years after the parting of the Red Sea is when the parting of the Jordan takes place. It's another generation. Remember what's happened to the other? The older generation has died in the wilderness. This is a younger generation. And God parts the water as He did on the Red Sea or the Dead Sea. But He gave instructions. He said, "Moses," or "Joshua, I want you to tell the people," not Moses, "Joshua, I want you to tell the people as you cross over that one man from every tribe is to pick up a rock as he goes through." Now, I don't know about you, but I like to go down to the river and pick up rocks. I usually pick up ones that I can fit in my pocket, though, not ones that I have to carry on my shoulder. But He said, "I want you to tell one man from every tribe to pick up a rock and put it on his shoulder, and then to carry that rock. And I want them to pick up the rocks from the very places that the soles of the priest's feet have stood." And so it's done. And once all of Israel gets across the Jordan and they get over to the other side, it says that the Jordan was restored to its flow. But then God said, "Now take those rocks and stack them. Pile them up. I want you to make a memorial. I want you to make a monument." And what that monument will say is that the Lord allowed us to cross the Jordan on dry ground. And when your children ask you, "Daddy, what does this mean? This pile of stones here," then you tell them what the Lord has done. Monuments. Memorials. The Australians, being somewhat of a contrary people, have a memorial day for a defeat, a battle that they lost. Sometimes that helps for us to remember the mistakes that we make. I can remember as a teenager being impressed as I toured Washington, D.C. at all the monuments, all the memorials, Lincoln's, Jefferson's, Washington's. I can remember thinking what great men they must have been. The one that impressed me the most was Lincoln's. It wasn't an obelisk. It wasn't a tomb. It was a man, Lincoln, sitting in a chair, deep in thought. Father of freedom and liberty. He wasn't always loved. He was hated by many. But a memorial is there to recognize a man who stood for freedom for all. I can remember sitting on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and contemplating that man's life. Would I have done that if there hadn't have been a monument there to do so? Probably not. Monuments make us think. Hopefully, they're raised for things that are positive. They can encourage loyalty to country. Certainly, they can encourage loyalty to God, as the memorials of the children of Israel were to do. About 20 years ago, I was asked to speak on a Sunday evening at a little country church in Hitchcock County, Nebraska. And this little country church had been built in 1903. So it's over 100 years now. They had a centennial since I was there. This was somewhere around 1983 that I was asked to speak. And what they said was, "We want you to come down and give us a little lesson on Sunday night. And we'll have a gathering of the people in the area. And we want to commemorate. We want to memorialize. We want to remember what it was that our fathers did." Small church, little building, no indoor plumbing, still had the outhouse, but it was a dual hole. But I can remember going down to that little memorial service a few days before time for me to speak and walking around it. And it was one of those places where the weeds grow tall, and just before the ceremony they bring in a bush hog, you know, and the weeds get scattered, and so you're still stepping in things. But I remember thinking, 80 years ago, in this seemingly desolate spot on the prairie, no other houses roundabout, five families got together and decided to honor their religious beliefs. The story goes that one of the men that was in the audience that day, his last name was Hoyt, was 10 years old when his father and these other four families got together and developed a stone quarry just a few miles away. And he tells about how he remembered his family and his father working along with those others to bring those stones up and set them up in commemoration of the Lord. That building was no longer hallowed in the sense of a weekly service, but every year they went back. For what purpose? To remember. I can't help but think it did some good. Not my talk. The memorial services. For the fact that they knew their roots. Probably the houses that they built were blown away or burned, made of wood, maybe even dug out from a bank, but not the church. And I use that phrase a little broader than what I intend. Not that building, not that particular place in which they had commemorated it to God. It was a teaching tool. Why did they celebrate it every year? To remind themselves and their children of their heritage. Turn with me in the New Testament to 1 Peter chapter 2. I want you to imagine that stone church building as we read this passage. If it helps, you can look at the rocks here on the baptistry and around the side. By the way, hasn't our stonemason done a good job on our rocks out here? Brad Pranger is his name. And I've passed on our compliments at how well he has remortared our rocks on the side of the building here. I learned from Carl this week at what actually started that erosion. Did you know there was a flood? Years ago, the little canal that runs past BJ and Heidi's place got stopped up a little ways down the way, and that water came across and flooded all of this area. So that water was about that deep, and it got up against the building, froze and thawed and froze and thawed, and that's what began the breakdown of the mortar on our rock out here. In this particular passage, as Peter is trying to encourage the Christians, he says to them, I want you to think of yourselves as rocks. Now, you may have thought your mate was stoned, but that's not what I'm talking about. He says, I want you to think of yourselves as pieces of a spiritual house, as individual components. Verse 4, 1 Peter chapter 2. Come to him, to that living stone, rejected by men, but in God's sight chosen and precious. And like living stones, be yourselves built into a spiritual house, to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For it stands in Scripture, Behold, I am laying in Zion a stone, a cornerstone, chosen and precious. And he who believes in him will not be put to shame. To you, therefore, who believe, he is precious. Now, there's the positive part so far of what Peter has to say. What's he encouraging Christians to be? He is saying, you've seen stone buildings. You can imagine a stone church building. I want you to think of yourself as being one of the rocks within the wall. How important are you? Well, you're vital. You may not be big. You may be very small, but you play a part in holding that wall together. Who is the chief cornerstone upon which all the others hinge? Well, that's Jesus Christ. And I want you to see yourself as an edifice to God, based upon Christ and his teachings. Be ye like living stones built together. For what purpose? for the purpose of worshiping and serving God and sacrificing to His name. Just as this building represents our faith, we are the church. We know that as individuals. We call this the church building because it is the assembly place. It is where we come together. There's nothing especially sacred about the sheetrock and studs and the windows and the carpet and the walls. No. But this does, in effect, represent our faith because it is a place that has been built. Some of you involved, many of you involved in the very construction of it. It represents our faith. It is a testimony to the visitors, to our children, a reminder to ourselves that this is who we are and we are lovers of the Lord. Peter says, I want you to imagine yourselves individually as stones within a building that has been resurrected or raised up to serve God, to offer sacrifices of praise based upon Christ. How precious is that cornerstone to you and me? It's vital. Now, if we remind ourselves that we're all in this together, we're a little less critical of each other, aren't we? We're a little less willing to go over and give someone a hard time and pry out a rock or two. What will happen? We'll be destroyed. That's why Jesus in John chapter 17 prayed for unity of the believers, that they may be one in us, that they might be a witness to the world, that I have loved you, they have loved me, and in turn they love one another. So for us, it's a beautiful, beautiful illustration of commonality, of being built together, stone upon stone, evidence of God's power, God's deliverance, God's love. What a memorial Peter is calling for us to be. But then he gets a little negative. He said, however, Christ is not accepted by all. Let's read on. Verse 7, to you, therefore, who believe, he is precious. But for those who do not believe, the very stone which the builders rejected has become the head of the corner, and a stone that will make men stumble, and a rock that will make them fall. For they stumble because they disobey the word, as they were destined to do. You can imagine this large cornerstone that is beneficial and profitable, and when placed and then all the stones gathered into it, being set out aside and discarded and becoming a stumbling block. Not utilized to build the church, not sanctified, not relied upon, not built, but rejected. And what does it do for all those who pass by? Can you imagine? You ever driven down a four-wheel drive road and there's been a little bit of a landslide and there's a big rock in the middle? And you can't straddle it because you don't have enough clearance? And you got a choice to make. What are you going to do? Well, you could do one of those 50-point turnarounds and head back down the road. Or you get to looking at that rock and you think, what, Bob? Maybe I could move that rock. Just maybe I could move that rock. Maybe with a little help, you take that rock and you roll it out of the way. In its proper place, it was a thing of beauty. But out here in the middle of the road, it's an obstacle to stumble across. So it is with Christ to those who do not believe. He becomes an obstacle in their path. Something that they try and just get around or go over and cause themselves much harm. But not for you and for me. That rock placed alongside me and you, built into a spiritual house. And so Peter continues, verse 9. Thinking about this house that has been built for what purpose? But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people, that you may declare the wonderful deeds of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. Once you were no people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Beloved, I beseech you, as aliens and exiles, to abstain from the passions of the flesh that wage war against your soul. Maintain good conduct among the Gentiles, so that in case they speak against you as wrongdoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. There were two main points that Peter made. Once I've become a part of God's house, I have a purpose. I have a reason for living. I am to declare and I am to maintain good conduct. Can you imagine that little house in the Wildwood, that little church in the Vale? It's lighted when all around is darkness. An opportunity, a place of safety and comfort and joy. As you draw close, you hear the voices of the singers, the praise going forth to God. And though you are cold and bedraggled, you know that there I can go for comfort, the light shining. To me, that's the imagery that comes to mind as I read this passage. You are God's own people, that you may declare the wonderful deeds of He who has delivered you. That rock at Mizpah, those stones on the plains near Jordan, those were testimonies to God's power and deliverance, how He loved His people, how He wanted them to be victorious over their enemies and the elements, how that He was a God of compassion. Peter says to you and to me, we are testimony, we are living stones built into a spiritual house to memorialize, to testify to the wonderful deeds of God. I wonder how well we're doing. Scattered upon the path, we become obstacles to others. United in our love for God and for each other, we become a light, a place in which others can come and find the Lord. Maintain, verse 12, good conduct among the Gentiles, so that in case they speak against you as wrongdoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. Think of our words, our witness, our testimony, our declarations as being a stone, and the deeds that we do, the way that we live out in our lives as being the mortar that draws all things together. This same young man that did our stone out here on the wall did the fireplace and the wood burning stove wall at our house. Several had encouraged me to do that myself. Oh, you can do that. I've never done that before. You can do that. You just do this and you just... I even had a stonemason come in that he didn't have time to work on my house. He was so busy doing the bank downtown, High Country Bank, doing a nice job down there, by the way. But he came in and he said, oh, you can do this. And he spent 30 minutes telling me how I could do it, how I could mix the mortar, how I could lay the rock, how I could do the wire, how it all could be done. And I kept thinking, I can't do that. I didn't do that. When I saw Brad this past week at the graduation ceremonies at Darren Patterson, I complimented him on his rock out here, and I told his wife, you ought to see how good a job he did on our fireplace and on our wood stove. And I can remember sitting back, and I'd take a picture every once in a while, but I'd just sit back and watch Brad work. That's nice. He'd mix that mortar up. He'd have it just the right consistency. He'd take a rock from off the pile. He'd look. He'd maybe set that rock down, and he'd pick up another one, and then he'd butter it. He'd put the mortar against it. And then he'd press it into place. Hold it for 10 or 15 seconds. See, I did learn something. Hold it for 10 or 15 seconds, and then he'd remove his hand. And then he watched the rock. Because he's ready to press it again if it decided to start coming loose. But just like he did with us out here, he had wire mesh in behind so that the mortar began to cling to it. If he'd put that rock up there without the mortar, it'd fall, wouldn't it? The two have to work together. The rock and the mortar, and then he placed and he worked and he situated and he groomed and he cleaned. Beautiful job. Peter says to you and to me, be ye like living stones, not only in word but in deeds. And you will compliment the Lord, and you will be built into a house that glorifies Him, a holy nation, God's own, a royal priesthood. Yes, monuments and memorials help remind us of the past. We grow stronger from the contemplation in our loyalty and our courage. It gives us opportunities to teach our children the lessons of life that are valuable. I've got another lesson that I'll do someday on Gettysburg. We went to Gettysburg too. The memorials there are shocking. memorials to encourage. Be ye such a memorial. Here I raise my Ebenezer. Hither by thy help I've come. Hasn't the Lord been wonderful to you? He's blessed us so. May we be a testimony, a witness, a memorial to His love and to His grace. On that rugged hill, there stands a cross. What does it memorialize? What does it represent? What does it remind us of? The sacrifice, the love, the compassion of our Father. By His death, we have hope. By His death, we have deliverance. By His death, we have life. If you're not yet a child of God, if you've not come to Him, if you've not been baptized into His blood, won't you come and begin today to be that living stone, fitted and joined together with the family of God to honor and to testify to Him as we stand and as we sing.